Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Jack Watts for Jack Watts Live, broadcasting to you today from the 10th floor of the We Believe Tower in Midtown Atlanta, overlooking the majestic skyline of Buckhead. And the sky is dark, ominous, and foreboding, exactly like the future of the United States of America under the leadership of the worst president we have ever had, Barack Hussein Obama. The 10th president, William Henry Harrison, was an old man when he was elected. They said he was actually too old to run. He was, I believe he was in his late 60s. And, you know, but back then, the life expectancy of somebody was no more than like 60 or 61 years old. Well, he ran for office saying he was fit as a fiddle, won the election, and on Inauguration Day insisted on addressing the crowd in his shirt sleeves to show that he was a real man and very vigorous and could withstand the cold. It was a bitter cold day, as is often the case, the 19th of January in Washington, D.C. Well, he caught pneumonia, got very sick, never did anything as president, dying 28 days later. He was president for a total of a month. Never did anything. He stacks up favorably in comparison to Barack Hussein Obama, who now owns the distinction, and we're very proud of him for this, of having run up deficits of over $1 trillion, real dollars, each of his first 4 years. All of the numbers have come in, and they are here today. And this last year, it's $1,100,000,000 and change, making 4 years where he has racked up record-breaking deficits. Now, putting this into perspective, calculating for the same dollars as it would have been during World War II, the debt that FDR accumulated to save us from Japan and Nazi Germany were less than what Obama has run up to do nothing but give people money who don't work for it, to waste money frivolously on foolish things like Solyndra and some of this green energy business, to fund things that he enjoys, to take elaborate vacations, to essentially run our economy into the ground, which he has done and is doing a very good job of continuing to do. This means that we have, for the first time in history, a president in each of the 4 years where the numbers are in and accounted for, created more than $1 trillion debt each year. Dick, my brother Richard, who's on the phone, don't you think we should give a shout out for Barack Hussein Obama for, you know, for this great accomplishment that he is, that he has done?
Hip hip hooray.
I mean, it's a, I mean, I'd say that this is a really stellar day in American history for us to know that, that we have a man who has led us, who has not done a thing for us. And there's something else while we're doing this that I want to bring to everybody's attention. If you remember, when Obama was running, about this time last year, we were, you know, we were talking about how could anybody elect a president, you know, who'd run up such debt? And at the time, it was like about $15,800,000. And we speculated, if you remember, was it going to go over $16 trillion before the election or not? And, of course, we didn't think anybody would be stupid enough to put him back in, but they did. And just at the time of the election, it was shortly thereafter, it went into $16 trillion. Do you remember that?
Yeah, it wasn't all that long ago.
It wasn't all that long ago. I mean, it was, here we are in August, and I believe that happened in November. It's possible.
November.
It's possible that it was December before it happened, but I think it was in November. I think it was just like a couple weeks after the election, to be honest with you. So that's like 9 months ago. All right. The national debt now stands at, it went over 17. So it's $17,142,000,000.
Billion.
Oops. $17,143,000,000. It just clicked up another $100 million. $100 billion.
You keep saying million. It's billion.
Oh, sorry. Yes. $17,143,000,000,000. That means that each household in America owes $140,000 in debt when it comes to unfunded liabilities that we have. It's $124 trillion. That means all the things that we have promised people that we can't deliver. So essentially, the United States is a massive Detroit. We are, you know, there's no way that we're going to be able to do that. But, you know, what we can do, what the federal government can do that the Detroit can't do or any state can't do is print money. So each month, the Fed is pumping in $75 to $85 billion into the economy. Now, there's nothing behind it. There's no wealth from it. It's just money, inflated money. And how do they get that into the economy?
They just print it.
Well, they print it, but what do they do with it? I mean, you haven't gotten $100 bills in the
You mean food stamps? Food stamps? To begin? Yeah.
Actually, what they do with
it. Free cell phones? Yeah.
Well, those are unfunded things that are, you know, that they're just buying. But this is different money. This is money that they are pushing into the economy to just kind of keep it going and to not, so that we don't feel the recession. Now, how they do this is by buying stocks. So the stocking, the country has got to be doing pretty well. Stock exchange is, you know, it's going through the roof. Well, that's not because of private investment. That's not company investment. That's not personal investment. This is institutional investment. The United States of America is buying stocks in companies, giving them money, essentially, which they love, and it makes the stock market look good. So the true effects of the economy are not seen. It's kind of like if you've got no money, moving into a nice house, wearing nice clothes, buying a nice car, and having a trophy wife, so that everybody thinks that it's there, but it isn't. And that is where we are right now. And you know what? That isn't going to work. And other countries are wising up. So what they're starting to do, since World War II, the dollar has been the medium of exchange worldwide. Now there are other countries that are moving away from that and plan to move further away from that because they say the United States isn't stable and we don't want, you know, to have the United, you know, to have a situation like Greece or Spain or Ireland, where we came from, or Italy, where the economy is so bad. Greece is the best example. Or we'll have worldwide depression, which is just something that, you know, that we really cannot, we can't afford to sustain. And yet at the same time, it's not going to change. We're in a really bad situation, you know, with Obama and the way that things are happening. But people are beginning to wise up. In the real clear politics, his disapproval is exactly at 50%. His approval, 44.8. Now you wonder, how can there be 44% that still approve of him? Well, there are some groups that will, no matter what, stick with him. You know, the Gay Lesbian Alliance, you know, African Americans,
the United Federation of Food Stamp Getters.
Well, you know, that people that are getting freebies are obviously very supportive of somebody that gives it to them. But at the same time, even the unions are turning against Obama because they don't like, you know, what's happening with this Obamacare. And the Republican Congress, House of Representatives, there are about half of the Republicans that do not want to fund Obamacare. And then there are another half that say, well, if we don't go along with that, we're going to lose the House of Representatives, and then Obama will have control of everything. Now, this makes it an interesting conundrum. My thinking is that defunding Obamacare is the right thing to do. And if you do the right thing for the right reason, it will end up working. With Obama's approval rating continuing to decline, and listen, there are a couple of these polls that are out, you know, like Reuters, that has a 10-point gap. Only 42% approval and 52% disapproval. The same thing with Fox News. The Economist has 9 points. Rasmussen has -5. Now, Gallup has +5. It's the only one that's in plus figures. How that can happen is beyond me. But this isn't working for Obama right now. And here's the thing. If you're administrating this country, which is what the president does, and you're doing it based on constitutional law, doing what you're supposed to do, then that's what you have to fall back on. I am doing what I swore that I would do, which is defend the American people and the Constitution against all enemies, domestic and foreign. That's your job. That's the job description. But if you start out with the fundamental presupposition that, well, I'm not constitutionally qualified to even run for president, so, you know, the hell with the Constitution, I'm going to do whatever I dadgum well please, And, you know, the American people have elected me and then reelected me. I'm going to do whatever I want. And that's what he's doing. So he's not governing based upon the law of the land. He's governing based upon the will of those who want him to serve. Now, that's why the polls are so important to him. He's got to have the popularity in order to get his agenda through. And right now, it's not there. And then there's the other part of it, and that is he's a narcissist, and they can't stand for, you know, to not be loved, and the adulation has to be there, and it's waning even from people on the far left. You know, some of the Matt Damon. Well, you know, Barack Obama divorced me, you know, because Obama isn't doing the things that the hard left wants him to do. So here we go. He's kind of in a spot. And then, which brings me, you know, to foreign policy and what's happening in Egypt. And that's really what I think we need to talk about a little bit here. We're on the wrong side. We had a stable ally with Mubarak. Was he a dictator? Sure. It's the Middle East. There are no democracies the way we have them, not in the Muslim world. Israel's a democracy. Israel fights things out with party politics just like we do. It's a stable democracy, but there are no stable democracies in the Muslim world, in the Middle East. So we undermined Mubarak. The Muslim Brotherhood overthrew him, had an election, and they won the election. As soon as they did, they started instituting Sharia law. And, they killed a bunch of Christians. That's, you know, and there are... Egypt has a lot of Coptic Christians, which are the Christian. That's a it's like an Orthodox community, and it was started by the Apostle Mark, as in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, who wrote the Gospel of Mark. He migrated to Alexandria, and the Coptics have been there for 2,000 years. Now, the Muslim Brotherhood doesn't like them, so they have been murdering them. And in this kind of transition, the Christian element has really undergone a massive purging. I mean, the oldest church in Egypt was it's
destroyed
in Minya, and the Muslim Brotherhood went into it like 5 days ago, killed a bunch of people, and made a mosque out of it. It's the Anaba Ibrahim Monastery in the village of Delga. And using automatic weapons against defenseless people, and they're, you know, the army, you know, is trying to keep control in Cairo. And so they have, you know, haven't been able to do things about it. And yet here we are, and the Obama administration is pro-Muslim Brotherhood, the people that are killing Christians. How's that work? Now there's another thing that's being reported, and we're just going to mention this because it, you know, I don't know if it's true. The Muslim, they're. In an interview with Anatoly news agency, Saeed al-Shatar, the son of Muslim Brotherhood leader Kiryat al-Shatar, said that his father had in his hand evidence that will land President Obama in prison. I'm reading this essentially. Stressed that the senior U.S. delegation that's there now, which is, you know, Lindsey Graham and John McCain, know full well that the fate and future of Obama is in the hands of this guy that's in prison, and that he has this information, documents and recording that incriminate and would condemn Obama. The documents were placed in the hands of people inside and outside of Egypt. So they're trying to insist that this guy get out of jail. And essentially, what this information says, and I'm just going to paraphrase, and I don't know if this is true. So this is highly speculative, but I'm just going to say that it is up front. They say that Obama... had a secret meeting with some of these Muslim Brotherhood people and pro-Morsi people, and gave them money so that they would turn the Sinai Peninsula, which is what borders Israel, into a military place where they would train Hamas to destroy Israel. Now, that is beyond the bombshell, and that Benghazi is all tied to that, is what they're saying. Is it true? Who knows? But it's been on the internet for a while now. And when I say a while now, over a week. You're not talking. That's pretty wild stuff, isn't it? Well, when I
doesn't surprise me. It doesn't surprise me at all.
No,
actually,
I get
nothing. Middle vomit surprises me now.
No, I also get that. It makes me my very first thought when I looked at this material was other than is it possibly true, but it definitely would explain why Obama, you know, maintains his commitment to the Muslim Brotherhood as versus this rising against them, because the Egyptians, who have had peace for decades and have been largely westernized, these women don't want to run around in a burqa. They don't want to have people, you know, have their heads cut off. They, you know, Egypt is a fairly moderate Islamic country, other than the Muslim Brotherhood. Now, the army, which is in control, and you see all of these signs. We love the American people, but we do not love the dictator Obama. You know, we love Americans, but we don't want Hillary Clinton, John Kerry, or Obama. Obama, keep your hands out of Egypt. Well, okay. This is all stuff, and how important is this? Well, the importance of if the Sinai Peninsula is given to Hamas, that takes all of Israel's southern border and makes it to where it is not defensible. And it has been peaceful since the 70s when Jimmy Carter, to his credit, worked out a peace between the Egyptians and the Israelis that has stood. Now, the military now and the people in Egypt, they want to continue with that. The Muslim Brotherhood does not. They say that, you know, the Jews are sons of pigs and of apes. And they believe that. They don't believe the Jews are really human beings. The last time there were people that didn't believe the Jews were really human beings were the Nazis. You remember Schindler's List?
Yeah.
And watching it. You remember Amon Gird in the basement with a pretty Jewish girl, and he said, "I know technically you're not a human being, but you're very pretty." Because he was lusting after her, and he was in this moral dilemma because she was a Jew and not a human being, and they aren't really human beings in Nazi ideology. In Muslim ideology, Jews are not really human beings either. That's why destroying them, getting them off the face of the earth is the will of Allah. And here we are backing these barbarians against people, the Jews, of faith and of peace and our main ally, and why the United States continues to be blessed, supporting them. That's a big deal. And Obama's right there with the Muslim Brotherhood. And here we are in America, and there's still millions of people who say, "Well, Obama says he's a Christian, so he's a Christian." There's zero chance of that. And yet, you know, we're in this fix. We don't have strong men and women who are willing to stand up the way they need to. We have some. We have some. You know, I certainly Rand Paul, certainly Ted Cruz, this Jewish doctor, Carter, Trey Gowdy, you know, Daryl Issa. I mean, there are a few, but there's not enough.
Just a handful.
And well, it's more than a handful, but there isn't a concerted power base, and part of that is because John Boehner, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, and third in line for the presidency, is he's not strong enough in his opposition of Obama, in his opposition to Obamacare, in his opposition to this huge deficit that we have. We just aren't strong enough to oppose these things. So what have we got? I mean, you know, we have people like you and me on the air that talk about it, and people who will listen, and, you know, people who are saying, "Well, Obama isn't exactly everything that he said he would be," and who are fed up, but they're fed up because he's taking $100 million vacations and, you know, and doing stuff like that. But, you know, the scandals aren't really moving the way they're supposed to. We just got a lot of trouble and a lot of things happening. That being said, you know, we're out of time. And, you know, we've got lots to do and lots to talk about. And we didn't even get to half the things that I wanted to today. But our time is important. And, you know, we're here and we're going to stay here and we're going to do what we're supposed to do because this is what God wants us to do. And so let me just say goodnight, Dick, and God bless you and God bless the United States of America. Good night.